are listening to the Oakland Asian Mom Podcast.
Welcome to the second episode of Oakland Asian Mom. Our podcast is hosted by two Asian American working moms living in and raising kids in the Fruitvale in Oakland. I'm Cheryl, one of your hosts.
And I'm Sarah, your other host. So for today's episode, we have a real treat. We are going to talk to the ladies of Cheryl's support group for couples. So this is a group that has been meeting for over 10 years, and it's comprised of four couples that provide support, accountability, and wisdom to each other. So we thought it would be kind of good for you all to reflect on your experience and for us just to hear about what you all do and how it's been going in the past 10 years or so. So our listeners should know a little bit about Cheryl, but we'll have the other ladies introduce yourselves. So Angela, how about we start with you?
Sure. Hi, I am Angela, and I am a Filipina, and I live here in Oakland.
And Angela, could you tell us a bit about your partner and your relationship and what kind of faith and racial background he is?
Yeah, sorry. Okay, so my partner, my husband, is Jewish, and we have two kids. And let's see. And we've been married, oh my goodness, I stopped counting. What, 12 years? Has it been?
I
kind of match up. Yeah, it's been that long. Yeah.
Great. And Jill, would you like to go next?
Sure. My name's Jill. I'm a non-profiteer by day. I've been married for, I'm also going to stumble here. I've been married since 2007. How about that? I'm Japanese American. He's Indian American. I'm Christian. He's Hindu. We have one Japindian kid and one dog, and we've been living in Oakland since about 2006, I think.
Great.
Been here for a while.
Yeah. And Angela, how long have you all lived in Oakland?
Oh, I have been here a long time, but I did leave. So it's like over 20 years, but I did take a break. I left and then I came back.
Okay.
Yeah.
And last but not least, Jody.
Yeah. So I've been in Oakland since 2004, and my partner came to Oakland 2004 as well, but we didn't meet till 2005 and been married in 2008. So 13 years. We live in the Fruitvale. I identify as white, and my partner's Korean American, and we have one adopted son who's half white and Korean American.
Great. So since I'm the outsider and not a member of your group, I'm really curious to learn a little bit about what goes on. So Jill, do you want to tell us a bit about how the group began?
You know, it's funny to think back on that because I can't tell you exactly where it comes from, but I remember when we were walking around the lake, Angela, talking about Gottman. So for those who don't know about Gottman, he is a therapist and he's written 1.5 million relationship books, but we had a shared interest in learning a little bit more about what he had to say. And at the time, we were newlyweds or soon to be newlyweds. So it felt like, oh, sure, why not? I mean, it couldn't hurt, right? And I don't know if I'm remembering that correctly at all, but I do remember that walk around the lake.
Angela, do you have anything to add about the start of the group?
Yeah, I remember actually, Jill and I had a conversation because she and I both are in an interracial marriage.
And
we talked a lot. And interfaith, that's right. And so we talked a lot about that and just kind of like, well, who else? Like, this is hard stuff. I mean, marriage is hard enough. And then, like, you know, just the conversations that you would find in interracial marriages that maybe that you won't find in other marriages. We don't know. We were exactly newlyweds and whatnot. And so that's when he said, you know, we don't need to go through this alone. If you and I can walk around the lake and talk about this, what if we have other couples where our husbands can also speak to, like, all of us with our partners, really talk about stuff in an open, you know, in an open way with other couples? What would that look like? Mm-hmm. And so kind of went from there.
So did you all start kind of reading a Gottman book together, or kind of how did you start out the structure?
Well, these were the days before we had kids, and I think that's worth mentioning because we had time. We had time to think about how we wanted to structure this thing, and it started with a book. I can't remember if we all had the book or if one of us had the book. I know I had a copy, but we literally went through one chapter at a time, and I think we were, like, very disciplined at the time, but, yeah, we didn't have kids, so it was a different day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think our next question is, how do you typically structure your time together, right? And mm-hmm. So I'm so glad we had the same memory, Jill, because that's exactly what I would say. It was the book, I even had to look it up because it's been so long, right? The 7 Principles for Making Marriage Work, that's the book. I think we did one chapter a month. We would get together in someone's home, and the 8 of us were pretty committed. It was pretty amazing. I think we started in 2011. And the reason I remember that is because I got married that year. I've been married 10 years. And we were like the newlyweds joining this group who have been married. I went to Jill's wedding. I wish you went to all your weddings. And you had been married, Jill, for at least three or four years mm-hmm. at that point. Mm-hmm. And so the way we structured our time in the very beginning was to have one chapter, we would read it, and then we would just kind of debrief it and share highlights with each other. And then over time, as we finished the book, it sort of morphed into meeting maybe less frequently, but still committed. And we did a variety of things, like we used to do these consultations. Remember those guys? where if there was an issue, it would be like, okay, Jody and her partner would talk about, and they would talk about this core issue of theirs that they were struggling with, and we would just listen, and we would kind of be this empathetic ear, and then sort of just help them narrate or just process sort of as a witness mm-hmm. and a support to what there was going on. Then we also do like check-ins and highlights, check-ins that are just how things are going and highlights, and then hard things. And then also how we can support each other practically, right? Whether it's let me babysit once the kids arrived to let's all girls, we should just have dinner together one time as it just our time together. So that's sort of how it's structured. And I think over time we just added food and hang out.
And now it's like once a quarter instead of once a month.
Yeah, we're like every season, or
like every year.
Mm-hmm. But still, there's a reason to get together. We kind of text each other, and we even have our own Google group email and spreadsheets.
The Love Lab.
Yeah, we call it the Love Lab.
I have 2 questions. One is, would you recommend the book that started it all? And the second is, if you would feel comfortable sharing, like, what are some common issues that have come up over the years for you all? So maybe Jody, you want to talk a bit about
yeah.
that?
Yeah. But the main lesson that I learned from that book was filling up your positive bank. Like, kind of make sure that you're spending a lot of time just having positive time together, so that when the challenges come, mm-hmm. that you're not so depleted you can't get through the tensions, because mm-hmm. every couple mm-hmm. will have tensions, but having enough built up in the relationship can help you get through that. So that's mm-hmm. that's what came from the book. And then the tensions that we talked about, that I remember coming up most among us, a lot about who helps out with household chores and who doesn't. tensions around work-life balance, different view, like sometimes one partner likes to live to work and the other might love to work to live kind of thing. Differing needs around affections. There's those of us who love to be hugged, even in the groups. Who likes to sit next to each other and cuddle, and who wants to be across from the room while we're in our sharing time?
And yes, there were a lot of observations like, oh, okay, you guys are sitting very close together, you know?
and then, of course, when kids came into the picture, we started to talk more about parenting styles and even how we were parented. So we started to see a big difference from those of us who have had immigrant parents and those of us who haven't. So the interesting thing about all those issues, or what was fun or interesting, or just kind of the best part of the group for me, is seeing how I could see myself in someone in the other couple.
So what are some similarities and differences that have come up in sharing about your core issues with each other? Angela, do you have some thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think Jody touched on some of that. So like I said, it started initially as like this whole interracial thing and whatnot. And what's very fascinating is that we all actually have different birth stories. That could be another podcast topic in itself. Like, four couples and our birth stories are so different, and how our, you know, so Jody is an adopted child. Even that process, it's not just like, hey, let's adopt. Like, that was a whole story in its own. And then that, you know, of course, and that affects marriages. And I mentioned early, I have two. Actually, I have one by birth and one we acquired, sort of adopted, you know, who's a teenager. And so, like, that in itself is a story. And so as we, like, you know, grew in our marriages, and then babies came in, and they all did not come in at the same time, I think there's a lot of similarities in a sense of, like, how we value family and what we think of that. And at the same time, like, the differences, like Jody said, we would cross, you know, like, who is an immigrant, you know, within the group, and somehow have similar perspectives about children, about marriage, and who's not. And as we talk about, you know, the issues that are really painful, I felt like it was helpful to see, like, oh, you know, Jill's husband is actually very similar in how I think, because we're both immigrants. And so how we express ourselves, or how we think, or our relationship with money, that's another thing, sort of like the crosses and a lot of discussion about our relationship with money. And the book itself also, if you guys remember that there were quizzes and tests that it's supposed to start conversations / fight. I don't know. Yeah. Yeah, they were hard, right?
Yeah, I always felt that I always did bad on those tests, even though I'm such a good test taker in real life. Like, I have so much work in terms of the, like, affection area, and I was like, dang, thinking that, like, because I do most of that chores, somehow I should be really doing good on those tests, right? But it wasn't really about that. I don't even know the principles. I think about it, the seven. And I just want to piggyback on what Angela said, is that there is something very refreshing and actually stimulated, like, different brain cells. Like, I could just sometimes experience the firing of my neurons when somebody else would be able to either identify the same feeling that I'm feeling in the dynamic with my husband, or hearing myself, hearing the other person reflect about how they feel when they receive that, right? So it really goes both ways. I can see the work that I need to do, and then I can also see, and the pain and, you know, the hurt I have caused my husband. But then I could also feel like, oh, this person really gets it. And I feel good because I feel acknowledged that my issues aren't like so weird or so uncommon. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't feel like I'm just spinning my, like making it up somehow. And so I think that to me was very validating. And sometimes it's really easier to hear, you know, what your growing edge is from another person that's not your partner, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Right? And I think that is the probably the most healing aspect of it. It was like, oh yeah, I do that. And I hear how that affects that person. I care mm-hmm. about that person. I should be caring about my husband the most. I need to figure out how to make it better, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's mm-hmm. just something that just is live. And it's hard to do if you're not in these different dynamics, you know, with other people mm-hmm. in the room.
Yeah, I remember there was times that, like, I would be struggling through something with my husband and be like, so Cheryl and Angela, help me understand. Because I'm at my wit's end. I've yeah. had it. And I needed someone like Cheryl and Angela to, like, reiterate it to me in a way that wasn't going to put me on the defensive because they're not my partner, right? Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, yeah. mm-hmm. I see. Okay, fine.
Or sometimes then we'll nudge our husbands. Go call him. Go talk to him right now. No, you need to talk to him. You can't talk to Jill like yeah. that. Go.
Or they would coach each other. Yeah. I think there was one very famous yeah. like Valentine's Day breakfast that your husband, Angela, tried to make you one time. And I remember flurries of text messages of like, okay, pull out the pan. Get the bacon. Put the bacon
Pour the oil in the pan. No.
Don't make it too crispy. You know, like
he was trying to do right.
Wasn't it spaghetti or pancakes at one of the retreats?
It was something that I think many of us would find to be pretty basic. Yeah, basic. You know.
Yeah.
And it was like it was a process.
Yeah, during our retreat on the weekends, I think typically a couple signs up for the meal. And so even that in itself was sort of like fun to see couples interact in the kitchen and figure out how to do the meal and prep for the meal.
No, I think also we traded, like, you don't have to be in a couple.
My
husband was partnered with Jody's husband. So my husband got a cooking class with Jody's partner. You know, just like, I think we did a little switcheroo. And it's one thing I wanted to add also, along with the Gottman book, we layered the love languages.
Oh, there was love languages.
Remember that?
Yeah.
We had the love languages, like, you know, well, touch is your love language, but I can't meet you there. Not when I'm mad yeah. at you. Yeah, right. mm-hmm. That was like another layer we added on this.
One thing that I'm sort of picking up on is that there must be like an immense foundation of trust between all of you, because I imagine that having to hash out what are very personal relationship issues in front of friends and people in your community can't be easy. So what has that been like to share your struggles with people that know your partner? Cheryl, yeah. you want to talk a bit about that?
I think because we have perspective of being this love lab for like 10 years. And the reason why we call it love lab is because in the Gottman book, I don't know if it's his way of...
It was like testing divorces, right?
Yeah, he had a lab in Seattle.
Yeah, he had a love lab. It was called Love Lab in yeah. Seattle, where mm-hmm. the couple would move into this apartment. And like you said, like in 5 minutes, I could decide whether or not this couple is going to make it, right? And so we always joke, oh, we got to go to the love lab and see what Gottman would say about us, you know? It was sort of like Big Brother-ish that, you know, it's kind of weird.
We didn't like that part about Gottman.
Yeah.
Little creepy.
So just to go back to, so why, how's it like? Well, it's that, yeah, I think over time, over 10 years, even though we don't see each other as a group that often. I think being able to go through these different life stages with each other as early in our marriage, even layering that with professional kind of paths, figuring out what it meant to grow our family, having our families, and then sort of like now we're sort of like emerging into going to, as our kids get older, into elementary school, right? I think the foundation of trust has been built because everybody was sort of very vulnerable and real with each other from, I think, from the early get-go, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so be able to be raw and to cry and just to say, like, we're having a really hard time was easy. I think at the point you have to kind of ease into it, of course. But I think there were moments where I was really, like, pretty amazed to be able to receive and witness real struggle or real pain, you know, right? It's like, I don't want to mention Brené Brown because sometimes everybody mentions her, right? But I'm going to. She always talks about how I want friends who really, who kind of are worthy of when things go down and I'm in my rawest, I could tell them anything and they're just going to love me, you know? That's kind of like the epitome of like what a true friendship is her whole thing is about being vulnerable, right? How can we show our deepest, deepest vulnerability and just feel embraced by it? And I think to a certain extent, there were moments that all of us had mm-hmm. where we really did that. And there was like no judgment. There was just, even if we just had to be silent, if there was silent about like, wow, thank you for sharing that. I think that made it very easy. Just to be with each other.
I think that vulnerability is what made the trust or created like even more love, you know, and kind of safety of like, that's where we connected being most human together or, you know.
And I think over all those years, too, it's like, you know, all of us have messed up. All of us have been in the wrong, you know. So it's like there's no room for like this person is usually in the wrong. It's not like a tit for tat kind of thing because we've all been there. And when you're all kind of like laid bare like that, you can have a very different kind of relationship, I think.
Yeah. And I think we've actually internalized some of the different dynamics. Like I sometimes hear my husband say, remember when so-and-so said this during the love lab? That's kind of like how I'm feeling right now. or Angela's husband likes to text me sometimes. Maybe I don't want to make it a secret, but he says, what do you think, Cheryl? And I would just give him a little coaching, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think it's that kind of like, outreach that even though again we don't meet in person as often or as regularly, it is a like this outgrowth of trust, of an extension, like these are the people who are with me, you know, helping me to make this work.
Yeah, I definitely attest to that because I mean there was a point where like I wasn't sure if we're gonna make it. It was just going through a really hard time. And I remember sharing that with a group and like, you know, I don't even think we should be in the couples group because I don't know. I don't think we're going to know that. And I just really felt loved in the group. I felt really just covered, you know, not that nobody was out there to solve our problems. But certainly, you know, continued to root for us. And I was in pain and they were in pain. Mm-hmm. So I think that's, was, you know, a testament to the group.
I think in my own life, when others are brave enough to be vulnerable, that it feels like an invitation and a safe space for me to also be vulnerable. So it really sounds as though that kind of energy really exists. And, you know, my assumption is that women will gather in these types of spaces together, but not so much that like their male partners would. And so it's kind of an interesting group in that way, that it's couples kind of getting support from each other. And you have mentioned a bit about how I think 3 out of 4 of you are in like an interracial, interethnic marriage, and there's some interfaith couples as well. And have there been any other kind of similar issues that you all have dealt with in the context of this group?
Yeah, so when you have an interracial marriage, you know, it's almost like you have to learn another language on top of the language of marriage. And so it was very supportive, like, you know, well, Jody is, you know, somewhat can kind of speak my husband's language. She's not Jewish, but as a white woman, she's kind of like can help relate and translate. And then I think not only the interracial thing, also there's the immigrant, non-immigrant thing that's happening. And I think people, you know, just putting on the table the challenges that kind of comes with that. It's here, like you said, here it's good to hear the men really share what is so hard mm-hmm. about understanding us and then say it out mm-hmm. out and open. And like
for
that.
Me being an interracial marriage in the group was really helpful for me. Perhaps it's as a white person, just like seeing race more clear. I think that's always a challenge for us as white people to bring the race dynamic that's always there in the story. But also when you're in such a close relationship, like a marriage, there's so many factors that play into the tensions or how you relate, like how we grew up, our past hurts, our past pains, and the racial dynamic on top of it. Like all of those are playing into the differences in a marriage. And I know with my partner and I, we talk a lot about how we grew up and our, like our family dynamics and being in this group. I almost wish we could talk about it more. Maybe that's our 2.0 going forward too. But being in this group helped me to bring in the racial lens as well, just having more couples and seeing the differences where I start to see like, oh yeah, this is not just my partner and me, but there is that racial lens going on in our relationship too.
So I know with parenting, a lot of times I will find myself doing things that my own parents did and modeling it without being intentional, but it's just sort of like rooted in me to some extent. But I'm wondering if you grew up seeing your parents nurture their own marriages or not, and how kind of being in this group has been different or the same as what you sort of saw your parents do. Jill, do you have anything to say about that?
Yeah, I mean, I feel similarly, especially becoming a parent. You know, you think about what you saw growing up and if it's something that you want to continue. I mean, in our relationship, you know, I'm a fourth generation Japanese American and my husband's from an immigrant home. Like, there's like worlds of difference between the ways we were raised and what we saw as norms in the day to day. But I feel like, at least for us, a lot of, as negative as this sounds, a lot of our energy was like, there are things we don't want to carry forward from what mm-hmm. we saw in our own homes. We want to do this differently. Of course, you say this, but that is still your story and it shapes what your norms are. And so it's one thing to say it, it's a whole nother thing to do it. And you can't help but bring that with you. And I think that's something that has come up a lot for everyone in the group. It's like, oh, my parents were really affectionate. My parents were not. My parents told me they were proud of me. My parents did not. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, your kids is their own person to add into that complexity. And I've heard it from every single one of us, like the times we're like banging our head on the wall, like, not only does my partner not get me, now we have this kid in the mix and he's dealing with it in another way. And there's, I don't think there's any right answers in this, but just like everything else, it's really nice to have other people there to either affirm or just, you know, be a mirror or to be like, I see you and I hear you in that struggle. Like that is huge, I think, as we all go through the struggles of first time parenting and for a couple of us to have more than one kid too.
So we're kind of coming close to the end of our time together. And Jody, I actually really liked what you shared about filling the tank. And I'm wondering, like, what are some other things that people have taken away from the group that has positively impacted your relationship with your partner? Angela, do you want to start?
I've really appreciated the space. Like you said, it's usually the women who talks about relationships and feelings. I really appreciated the space to hear other husbands, whether they really struggle with their wives, who's my good friend, to hear my husband share about his frustration out and open, and to hear other husbands. For me, that I learned so much, you know. Growing up, I'm Filipina. I came here when I was 14, 15 in a multi-general household in the Philippines. So we weren't poor or anything, but there's definitely growing up on a deficit model. We're always short of something. There's so many people in the house. You got to fight for, you know, and I have to remind myself that, you know, my faith is important to me, and I have to remind myself, I'm not raising an immigrant child here. This, my kid born here is, you know, is half Jewish. So my kid's a Julepino. And so I really appreciate this group where I learned from my husband is like, you know, we don't need to live in a deficit model. There's enough love to go around. And what we don't have, we can find a way and work it out. And I think that's been sort of like what the group has given. Like, it's not, we're not short of love. We're not short of solutions. Our faith is big, way bigger than what we put on the table. And I just really appreciate the group for having a really, really big table to hold all
and
what
I think
we
that,
bring in.
For me, it's like that really, if I had to do it, I always tell every couple that gets together or is like dating, like, you need to join a couples group because there's something about like if my partner and I are just on our own, the fear of that comes from, you know, like what you say, Angela, that really big stuff we bring in. When we hold that on our own, we're like, oh my gosh, like we're like the worst couple in the world. This is so scary. Are we going to make it? And then I come to the group, I'm like, oh, every other couple is dealing with the same thing. You know, it's like common or normal. And then I'm like, okay, I don't have to be so afraid of these challenges that we face. To Angela's point, like, we can make it. Like, this is something that happened. Like, being in a close relationship, of course stuff is going to come up. Like, in every marriage. And to know that that's normal, in quotes, or like common, at least, that we're not alone. That's the main thing.
And having people who can just meet you where you are. I mean, like I said, like, we've all had our moments where we've been like laid bare, and whether it was due to the relationship or just something externally that was affecting our relationship, we've all been there for each other through those moments. And it ranges, you know, like you mentioned, you know, like, it could have been something at work. It could have been a miscarriage, you know, like, we've all been through some really hard times in the last 10 years, of course. And, you know, having people who are like, I see you and I hear you counts for a lot in those really, really hard moments.
I think also the fact that you can get four couples where everyone gets along is kind of miraculous in itself. So
we haven't kicked off anyone all from the island.
the table is big enough. So our closed-in segment, we're going to do something kind of fun. We're going to ask the group of ladies two questions. The first question is, where were you hanging out in Oakland 10 years ago?
I can start. This is Jody. I remember hanging out in Oakland 10 years ago. Two places frequented. It was either running around Lake Merritt. So I was training in our Oakland Running Club with some of these same ladies, or hanging out at Lucas, which was seemed like the only club or bar that was open at that time. And so different now.
You can't see that Sarah's giggling because I think I gave the same answer.
Really?
No, I said Lake Merritt, and then Cheryl said Lucas.
But that's
what we did.
That's what we did.
We were together 10 years ago, that's why.
Exactly. 10 years ago, we were all at Lake Merritt. I mean,
yes.
And we were all at Lucas, and we were all probably at Somar, too.
I don't know. I was taking board to San Francisco, y'all. Salsa clubs.
Oh, there you go.
Well, excuse
did
me.
You go to like Loco Boco? Well,
yeah.
Did you
go there? Yeah.
Yeah, Cheryl and I were talking about
Polling
Lounge.
Oh my gosh, yes. I just talked to someone about Polling Lounge and yeah. Like, wow, that was the spot.
No, I was correcting Sarah. It's not Polling Lounge. It was called Storyville. A long time ago, before Polling came, so you know how old I am. It was like, even before Polling, it was Storyville, and I used to go there a lot, too. So, now, where do you hang out now? I mean, we're in COVID right now, so the answers might be slightly different, but, yeah, where do you guys go to Oakland, other than in your house and your backyard?
I was like, I haven't left this room for, like, 365 right. days. What are you talking about? Now I go to the park.
Jody and I go to Josie De La Cruz every twice a week.
Yep, morning walks.
I don't know if we'll say that we hang out there, but we do go to it frequently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's like a lot of nature places.
Yeah.
A lot of kid places. I like the we call it the big trees. I don't know if is that what it's really called? Does anybody know? The big tree. It might be just my family. I think it's in Joaquin Miller. And there's, yeah, so just hiking. There's a lot of nature places.
Yeah, us too. A lot of times at the park, a lot of time out in that big open space in Alameda where my child just runs ragged on a bike.
Yeah, we randomly saw you there one time.
Wait, which big open park?
And I randomly saw Angela there, too.
Near Dash Cellar.
That was actually the last Hangar One.
Oh, yeah, we went there. Yeah, that was our last Love Lab get-together.
Yeah. We go there a lot.
Well, thanks for joining us today, everybody, and thanks for listening to our podcast.
Take care and don't forget to call your mom.